2NURFM, Amanda McCreed here with Dennis Stewart for Health Naturally. Good afternoon, Dennis.
How are you, Amanda?
I'm great, thank you. Nice to see you.
Very nice to see you. Now, all dressed up in
all
your
dressed
black
up.
And
got
white
new,
gear
yeah,
and
got
your
my
hairdo.
Haircut.
Just for me, of course.
Just for you.
Oh,
I'm a new woman.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
If only.
Now, Dennis, yeah. Today you want to talk about some simple remedies to help fight against wintertime ailments.
Yeah.
You've already spoken about warmth and warming herbs, and today you want to talk about the value of garlic and onions as proven remedies for wintertime conditions, and also the valuable role that honey plays in helping treat coughs and colds.
Exactly. That's where we'll go today. A very interesting topic, which will kick off very quickly, looking at some of the questions that listeners have rung in over the last week or so, wanting clarification on this concept of warming herbs. So I'll spend just a minute or two answering those inquiries and pointing out the virtues of regularly using herbs or spices which have warming benefits and how that improves one's resistance to wintertime ailments. Just a few minutes on that, and then we'll look at the forgotten virtues of garlic, and certainly the unappreciated virtues of onion, and we'll have a look at the potential of honey, which is back in flavour after the massacre of them has now completed. Bees are back producing honey, and honey is there ready to be used, particularly in wintertime, as a great agent to address particularly respiratory conditions. Fascinating material to look at. We'll take it up shortly.
So, Dennis, you mentioned reviewing warming herbs as a result of listeners wanting to know more about them. What can you tell us?
Look, I'm responding to a couple of telephone calls relating to the topic that we took up on a number of occasions recently about the benefits of so-called warming herbs. A couple of listeners asked me to elaborate on that. They were fascinated about the possibility of herbs that had warming characteristics having benefits to deal with wintertime cold cough conditions. Let me just elaborate very quickly here. When we're talking about warming herbs, we're talking about herbs such as capsicum, we're talking about herbs such as ginger, and we're talking about herbal combinations such as curry, and there are many more. All those individual herbs or combination of herbs, as curry is, have the characteristic aspect of causing a sensation of warmth to occur in the body. Not many of us realise that there is a physiological explanation for that. Those herbs have, if you like, an effect on the circulation, and they're known in our profession as circulatory stimulants. So that means they enhance the circulation to various parts of the body. Capsicum, for instance, I've mentioned on this program, when regularly used or taken as a supplement even on a regular basis, has a definite improving effect on circulation to the extremities. So things like cold conditions of the hands and feet that can be worse in wintertime can sometimes be helped quite dramatically by including in one's diet the regular intake of a warming herb such as capsicum.
Any type of capsicum?
No, look, just capsicum. There are various preparations that go under the name of capsicum. They all belong to the genus capsicum. Capsicum annuum is the species that's frequently used. And you can get capsules or tablets that, how can you call it, enable you to use even capsicum, which is quite a pungent remedy, without too much embarrassment, because if you take it in a capsule, it goes through the system, it has its effect when it's released in the intestinal tract and bypasses some of the challenge that herb has on the upper gut. Most people can develop a degree of tolerance for the milder preparations of capsicum, which are in most of the solid preparations of tablets and capsules. But I've said before to people, if you find that too challenging, and many Australians do, or I don't, and you find a whole cohort of Australians now who can relate to using that herb on a regular basis because of the virtues that it has on circulation in particular. But ginger is an excellent remedy because it has a circulation benefit that implicates the respiratory system. And Simon Mills, a great English herbalist and an editor on many herbal books, and I'll pause there and say to listeners that sometimes ring me and ask me what books they should use. If you can get hold of a book by Simon Mills, arguably the leading English-speaking herbalist and writer on herbal books, his book, Dictionary of Modern Herbalism, is what I've taught from for many years. I still have it regularly. In that book, there's an excellent discussion on ginger as perhaps being a mild form of a warming herb that has proven benefits, particularly on the respiratory system. So when we talk about that, we're talking about herbs that improve circulation, that help oxygenation of tissues on the respiratory system, have the effect of being mucolytic, that means breaking up mucus and assisting the resolution of it. For all those purposes, I argue that if we as Anglos take more of these herbs in our diet, we will suffer less in cold, wet weather, such as we're presently experiencing. Start to use them, get to use them in any form, and you will find what many cultures around the world have found, that they have great benefit, let me emphasise, particularly on the respiratory system. Anyone who has a congestive condition of the respiratory system, in my experience, benefits when they regularly use supplements of ginger or cayenne, or regularly use herbs that have those characteristics in their meals. You might think I'm pushing the point, but that's one big aspect of why there's so much congestion, in my opinion, in our society. We have a diet that is very Anglo, mucus-forming, cold, and devoid of therapeutic properties. Many other cultures, some of whom are in this country now, fortunately, have brought with them this understanding of the role of warming herbs in preventing cold conditions.
Thanks, Dennis. We'll continue this topic shortly. Fascinating. Very interesting. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Albert from Charlestown has done. Hi, Albert. You've got a question about ginger.
Yep. I just want to say thank you to Dennis, because I've been taking ginger for about 15 years.
Good on you, Albert. Good
on
you.
It works. I saw you about 15 years ago, Dennis.
Did you really?
Yeah, and that's one of the herbs you told me to take, and I've been taking it with my breakfast when I have a salmon sandwich. Raw ginger.
That's the best way of using it if you can.
Yep, I just want to just say thank you and highly recommend it to people to use it, because I believe in it, and I've never had a cold or congestion in all those years.
Look,
I've had a bit of a sniffle in the nose, but nothing in the lungs.
That's not an unexpected result, Albert, because as you further read about ginger and its cultural benefits and also its medicinal benefits, you can begin to understand why it is such a popular food or herb in many diets around the world. And it has characteristics due to what I've been discussing as warming characteristics, which have circulatory benefits, which have immunosupportive benefits, and also which have digestive benefits. So I appreciate you contacting me, because...
Yep. And also it tastes good. People don't believe me when I tell them I eat raw ginger, but that does taste good.
Well, you'll get no contradiction from me on that one, Albert. I go over the top perhaps with ginger and with capsicum and with curry, but I would like to think that has contributed somewhat to my reasonably good health, and I think
it's
contributed.
Same with all vegetables. I'm starting to be more like my father. I'm 76, and Dad passed away in 82.
Yes,
but he used to believe in raw cabbage, raw capsicum, raw everything. Don't cook it. Just eat the actual fruit. You know, when I make a salad, you know, with oil and vinegar, it's always raw cabbage, tomatoes, and that. And mix it up in, throw a bit of ginger in, and it keeps me going all day.
My mouth's watering as I sit before the microphone, Albert. But your second point there is exciting also, because as a young student of natural medicine, going back many years now, and with a health ailment then that was stubbornly active, I studied the writings of the Birkebeiner Clinic in Switzerland, which was started by Ralph Burker sometime in the 19th or in the late 19th century. And he developed a clinic there, which I understand still functions. And the basis of his treatment was along exactly the lines that you've spoken about. He brought back into popularity, into stodgy old Europe. Yep. He brought back the value of raw vegetables. He brought back the idea, by the way, that muesli was a better breakfast cereal or better breakfast than anything else. Unfortunately, not many people realise that his muesli was essentially structured around a grated raw apple, blended with rolled oats and flavoured with a bit of yoghurt. My kids were raised on that, and my wife taught many women in our clinic how to make the original Burka Bennett muesli.
Yeah. So, well, when we come to Australia back in the 50s and that, Dad finally got a block of land at Charlestown and we lived off the garden.
Did you?
We had our own chooks and everything, but everything was off the land. The whole lot.
Well, you're not on your own there. My father was born and raised in Newcastle, but I can remember as a young kid growing up in Wall's End, when it was basically a wilderness, that in the backyard we had everything that moved, and everything that moved we ate.
That's right. And
we were never sick. You've got me wound up here, because one of the things that intrigues me is that I can never, ever... remember, I say this honestly, I can never ever remember as a kid growing up in Newcastle and running barefoot as we did right up until I went to fourth class barefoot. I can never ever remember having a day off school, never remember going to the doctor. And we just lived on plain, ordinary, working class food.
That's right.
And we were never sick. How things have changed.
And Mum's medical cabinet was two things.
Yeah.
One was iodine.
Yeah.
And one was mercurochrome.
Oh, I love that.
You had mercurochrome, you had a deep cut, you had iodine.
Well, you're not doing too bad. You sound well for 72. Well, I've got 10 years in front of you.
I'm 72.
Well, I'm 82, so we're both not doing too badly.
You're doing well. Anyway, this call is just to say thank you, Dennis.
Oh, good on you. Good on you.
I see you all the time, and I appreciate your advice.
Well, thank you, Albert.
And may God bless you with many, 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 many more years, mate.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Albert.
And we've got Anton on the line. Hi, Anton. You want to talk about lion's mane?
Yes. I want to talk about... Oh, I've been enjoying your topic on warming herbs. I like the curries and those
good
sort of things, but...
Good, Anton. That's great.
Yeah. So just the relationship between lion mane and anticoagulants. Slightly off topic.
Could you say that again, Anton? The
lion's mane, the fungus or mushroom, lion's mane.
Yes.
Which is supposed to be good for memory and brain fog, among other things.
Mm.
But also, when I've been having a look into it, it has a negative relationship, I think, with anticoagulants like aspirin.
Yeah. Look, this herb is not, how can you call it, one of the Western herbal medicine traditional herbs. It comes from a different tradition, I think more of an Asian tradition, and without in any way at all criticising that tradition, a lot of those herbs have not, in my opinion, sustained a chemical analysis that would clarify any anticoagulant characteristics that they might have. Whereas in Western herbalism, the modern expression of Western herbalism, very, very regularly and pointedly will point out any problems associated with the materia medica of Western herbalism that might be related to herbs that have some anticoagulant characteristics or sometimes coagulant characteristics. So I would be the first to acknowledge that some herbs, particularly not from the Western herbal medicine tradition, have chemical characteristics that could well interact even with mainstream medication or cause some effect on the blood profile that might otherwise not be recognised by the medico treating them.
Yeah. I've got a chronic blood disorder.
Yes.
And I take a Western medicine for that, hydroxyurea, And I don't know whether that's affected my memory. It doesn't seem to be as good as it used to be.
Mm.
And just looking at ways to improve. And I came across Lion's Mane and its potential properties there. But as I said, when I was doing some research, there were some negative effects when combining with anticoagulants. And I take an aspirin as well.
Sure. So well, it's you would have to be cautious of not only that Asian remedy, but also herbs, perhaps even in the Western tradition, that might interact particularly with any medical medication you're taking. What I would say here is what I'd encourage you to do in your looking for medications from the natural world that might help you, try to stick to the Western tradition, that is the tradition developed in the UK, Europe, and more so in the United States over many hundreds of years. Try to look into that because you'll find documentation a lot more explicit. That's what I've found, and would guide you more accurately and meaningfully in addressing this problem.
Okay, good luck with that, Anton. We've got a busy lines today. We've got Larry from Warrabrook on the line, and Larry wants to talk about
diverticulitis.
Hi, Larry.
Good afternoon.
Hello, Larry. How can we help you?
I'm basically looking into alternative treatments for diverticulitis and potentially H. pylori as well.
Okay. Well, let's.
What is there that you're aware of?
Okay. Diverticulitis is inflammation of the diverticuli that occur in the large bowel. For the sake of listeners, diverticuli are pockets in the large bowel, which can exist without necessarily causing any infection or inflammation. Diverticulitis is when those, and I'll talk in lay language, when those pockets in the bowel become infected and have subsequently inflamed, and that can be a very nasty and potentially dangerous condition, and in that level must be managed sensibly by antibiotic application, managed by your GP or sometimes even a gastroenterologist. However, the natural medicine approach to diverticulitis is to say what sorts of things might be able to lessen the incidence of infection in the diverticular condition. And this is where we do have a degree of considerable success. And I'll be very, very quick and just point out that in our profession, like the mainstream profession, we emphasise the role of a fibre. However, the fibre that we prefer to recommend for addressing diverticulitis is the well-known favourite of Western herbalism, the herb slippery elm. Now, slippery elm will give to the gut contents the bulk and the consistency that lessens the acuteness of the pockets in the bowel and indirectly lessens the possibility of infection. So the first thing for people that get regularly this wretched condition and who want to do something that will not conflict with what their good doctors are recommending to them, my view is, based on my experience, the best fibre that I have found that is effective in this condition, there may be others, but the slippery elm powder, and taken as a powder, in my opinion, is the best way to get its benefits. It's not that expensive. It's regularly available from our better health food stores, our pharmacies or our herbal medicine practices, and I recommend a couple of heaped teaspoonfuls of slippery elm powder in any form, taken regularly in the diet, is one of the best ways of helping work against this. However, the second thing we try to do is encourage an environment in the large bowel that antagonises a bacterial infection. And here there are a couple of things we recommend which I believe do help. First of all, I would recommend the ongoing use of a high-quality probiotic preparation. What they do is create a healthy environment in the large bowel that we argue is antagonistic to infection, to bacterial activity. And that is something that can be carried out in conjunction with slippery elm and a very good adjunct to it. Now, the other thing that we recommend, this might sound a little bit folksy, But I mentioned earlier in the program, or we have mentioned earlier in the program, that I was wanting to talk about garlic and its relationship to wintertime conditions. But garlic has a very useful role to play in dealing with infections throughout the gastrointestinal tract. And for years, I have recommended to listeners, to clients and to patients that they just simply get or buy what are called garlic pearls, an old-fashioned preparation of garlic. Take that, just a low dose on a regular basis, and I believe that that has a cumulative beneficial effect, particularly in the large bowel, where it works against bacterial action. I believe if you were to do those three things, Larry, you would contribute to better management of this wretched condition, which unfortunately sees too much treatment being restricted just to antibiotics and not enough treatment being directed towards preventative ideas. Try that, Larry.
And we've got Roslyn from Swansea on the line. You want to talk about severe COPD, Roslyn?
Yes, I do.
Hello, Roslyn.
Hi, how are you going?
How can we help you?
Yeah, my husband's got severe COPD and he just had COVID about 3 weeks ago and he's really struggling. The doctor's doing, giving him, first he put him on steroids, now he's putting him on antibiotics.
Yes.
I just wondered if there was some healthy way that he might help him a bit.
Well, at this level, you should do exactly what your doctor has said, because if he's had COVID, what your good doctor is doing is wanting to stop any intensity occurring and any graduation to a severe bacterial infection. So it would be most unwise to depart from what your good GP or specialist is doing for you. But with this chronic obstructive pulmonary disorder, which your husband has, his immune system is something that might benefit in helping him deal with infections, whether they be viral or otherwise, that would certainly compromise this condition that he has. And what I'd be suggesting is just a couple of simple things. First, take on board what we have been talking about today, and that is the regular use of ginger. I know that sounds simple, but ginger has a relationship to the disease respiratory system. It is mucolytic. It helps resolve mucus. It improves blood flow and therefore white blood cells to the respiratory system. It fights infection. It's one of the simplest things that your good man could do to help improve the health of his respiratory system. Now, there is a supplement that Dr. Sandra Cabot, who is an expert on this system of medicine as well as being a GP, in her book on dealing with COVID and the immune system, she recommends a substance called NAC. Just jot it down. I'm not going to ask you to spell it, but it's called NAC, NAC. Okay. Now, that is a supplement which is particularly useful, as the good doctor points out in her book, for chronic, ongoing, serious respiratory disorders, and ideally a supplement that, before your good man starts using it, should be discussed with the GP. It is safe. But because it is so active and is so medically utilised, it would be wise to mention this substance. Just call it NAC, N-acetylcholine, or cysteine is its proper name, but just write NAC if you're having trouble getting the more information on it. You can ring my rooms at New Lambton and we'll happily give you the spelling of the words. But your doctor should know of NAC as a supplement being used to address very serious chronic respiratory disorders, well spoken about in the wonderful book written by Dr. Sandra Cabot on COVID and the immune system. I think if you were to do those two simple things, you would enhance your husband's immunity, give him a bit better go at battling with this wretched condition. When you go down this pathway, discuss it with the good doctor that's managing your husband. I'm sure there'd be no objection to what I've recommended.
Well, good luck with that, Roslyn. We've now got Helen on the line from Blackalls Park, and she wants to talk about acne. Hi, Helen.
Hi, how are you going?
Good, thanks. What's going on?
I have a young friend that's got acne on his forehead and his face and the top of his back, and I was wondering if there's any hints or clues I could give him.
Look, how old is the person you're talking about?
About 14.
Okay. Is it a severe cystic acne?
No, it's just the red blotches, and he does the squeezing and that, so...
Okay.
Yeah.
Has he seen his GP about it?
No, not that I know of, anyway.
Acne, unfortunately, can take a number of directions, and if it's not well managed, it can lead to scarring acne, and that can be associated with what's called a cystic acne. I think it would be unwise for me to recommend anything to him, because if he's a young person, they're unlikely to comply to start with. But I would be recommending that he see his GP. I did well with this condition many years ago when my one of my daughters had quite an aggressive acne that did not respond to my natural medicine approach, and she was placed on a well-known antibiotic for a short period of time. I think that she was on it for about 3 months. To look at my daughter now, you'd never ever know that she had acne, but I'm convinced, had we not gone down the pathway of addressing it with an antibiotic, she would end up scarring. Talk to your doctor about a particular bracket of drugs, of which, say, minimycin is one of them. He would know about that. I think I'd be going that pathway rather than see the condition get out of control and without the young person being embarrassed and upset about what's happening to the skin.
Good luck, Helen. We're almost out of time, Dennis. We're going to wrap it up and, we'll have to talk about garlic and onion next week.
Well, we started off well.
We did
say something briefly about garlic in the context of helping diverticulitis, but we'll touch this fascinating topic next week. Garlic, onions, and, of course, honey. I'm a specialist on that. We'll talk about that next week.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.